The Asian Classics Institute presents The Art of Reasoning with Geshe Michael Roach. Recorded live in New York City in March of 1998.
This is the beginning of Class 2.
Tonight we'll do as content, right? Every night we'll do a little bit of content, and then we'll do a little bit of format, meaning how do you debate, how do you make a logical statement, and then we'll do a little bit of how do you debate. Okay, so for the content tonight, this is a very important section from a book called the Dura. Okay, and I'll write Dura for you. I didn't write it for you last time. Say Dura.
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 As you can see, it's really spelled Dura. All right, and in modern colloquial, they say Dura. Dura is a kind of literature in which great Buddhist masters of each college of Buddhism have taken the information in the Pramanavartika. The Pramanavartika is really, really difficult. In the monastery, every winter, we debate it for 3 months. It's rare to reach halfway through the book after 15 or 18 years. Most people never get to the third chapter. In the winter debates, which are the times when the colleges, when the great colleges meet together, it's like the, what is the basketball playoffs where the, what are they called? Yeah, the NCAA playoffs or something like that. It's like when all the best debaters, you field a team of like 50 guys and you send them to a central monastery. It rotates every year. And then you have an inter-monastic competitions, debating competitions for, we debate for maybe 16 to 18 hours a day, each other. And you get to meet the best debaters from all the other colleges. And even in that format, you can't finish more than 2 chapters of the Pramanavartika. It's very difficult. Dura is a place where there's a special kind of book where people have taken the important ideas out of the Pramanavartika and made separate books out of them. You're going to be studying 3 different duras, okay? Say Yongzhin Dura.
Yongzhin Dura.
Yongzhin Dura. Dura is the book that you had last week called The Key to the Logic Machine or something like that. That's the other name for it. But Yongzhin Dura means the Dura written by the Yongzhin. Yongzhin means a tutor of the Dalai Lama. And Purbuchok was a tutor of the 13th Dalai Lama. So Yongzhin Dura means all that Dura text that was written by the Dalai Lama's teacher. You're also going to study the Se Dura. Say Se.
Dura.
Se Dura. I'll write them for you, just so you know. in case somebody asks, okay? I know on the subway they often ask, which dura are you studying, you know? Say Yongjin? Dura. Yongjin dura. Okay, so the dura written by the Yongjin, by the teacher, okay? Oftentimes, and nowadays you'll hear in Tibet, Yongjin Nambanyi, meaning the two Yongjins. So normally there's a set of Yongjins who take care of the Dalai Lama, who teach, they are charged with teaching the Dalai Lama his Buddhism, or helping him remember, okay? It's called Bakchak Sepa, you know, getting him to get back to where he was before, and that's their duty. And if you saw Kundun, Sherpa Rinpoche, who was one of my first teachers, played Ling Rinpoche, and then there was Tujan Rinpoche. So, anyway, that's a Yongjin Dura. The next one is Sei Dura. Yongjin Dura, by the way, is used at Sera. Both of the colleges of Sera, Sera J and Sera Me, both use the Yongjin Dura to teach their young debaters. Sei means son, like spiritual son. Okay, like it means prince, and it means spiritual son or daughter. So a close disciple of a great lama would be called the Sei of that lama. Male or female would be called Sei. Sei refers to a lama named Ngawang Trashi. His dates are in your syllabus. I don't remember what they are, but he was a student of the great Jamyang Shepa. Jamyang Shepa is the textbook writer from one of the colleges of Daebung Monastery. We always say of Daebung, Daebung means pile of rice, and Sera means hailstones. So when we debate them, we say, you know what happens to a Daebung under a Sera, you know, we can wipe you out, you know. And they say, yeah, but if the debate goes on for a while, the hail would melt, wouldn't it? You know. So it's like we have a debate like that. Sei Dura is a great Dura text written for the College of Gomang in Daebung Monastery. Jamyang Shepa's books are the basis of most of the translations of Jeffrey Hopkins, Professor Thurman, Christopher George, Joshua Cutler, because they all were students of Geshe Wangyal, who was a Mongol, and the Mongols all belong to Gomang College. So that's the lineage, okay? Sei Dura. Say Rata Dura. Rata Dura. Rata was not one of the big three monasteries in Tibet, but it was an important monastery outside of Lhasa, I believe. They had a branch that they used in the summer called Jang, in a little village called Jang. And all the great debaters from Sera, Daebung, and Ganden would pack up a knapsack and a sleeping bag and walk to Jang every winter and debate there for 3 months. And that was the winter debates. And they were put on by Rata Monastery. Rata Monastery was the sponsor. And that's where they did the winter debates in Tibet. And that's been corrupted sometimes in India. They call it Jamyang Gunche, which means the winter debates of Jamyang, which has nothing to do with Jang, and it's just a confusion. Okay. Anyway, Rata Monastery was most famous for a certain logic text. The first Dura ever written in Tibet was written by a great scholar from Rata called Chogla Wuzer, and that's in your syllabus, okay? And you're going to be studying the Rata Dura. This is the mother of all Dura texts. This is the first great Dura text that was ever written. It was lost until recently. We found the Rata Dura maybe 15 years ago. 15 to 20 years ago we found it. Gene Smith found it, or helped find it. And then there's only one commentary to it in the world, and there's only one copy of that commentary that we know of, and that was brought into the computer center at Sera one day, and somebody said, I think this might be important, maybe you want to input it, and we saved it, and it was input, and we approached the head of Rata Monastery, who is Kyonglam Rinpoche, which you say Chongla, okay? That's his home monastery. He is the head of Rata Monastery. So we asked him if he wanted to pay for the printing, and he did, and we spread it all over Tibet and India, gave it away all over Tibet and India. So you're going to study that commentary and the Rata Dura. You're the only people to study it in the West. It was only just reprinted We only just found it. Okay. And that's the mother of all Dura texts. So you're going to study the last reading you'll have on the concept of time comes from the Ratu Dura. Okay. Tonight we're going to talk about the structure of a Dura is that there will be about 15 important topics covered in a Dura. And they will take it and it'll be presented in three sections, which are very cool. Okay, and I'll give them to you. This is how you learn something in the monastery. This is a three-step process. Here's step number one. It's called gak. Gak means to choke somebody, okay, or to stop something. And this refers to a step in logic where in the Duras, when you present a subject, first you get a bunch of crazy guys coming up and saying, I think it's like this. Okay, and you have like 10 or 15 crazy guys will come one by one in the book, and they'll come up and say, I think emptiness is this yellow light that comes to you, you know, and then they'll blow him away. Gak means they'll blow him away. So gak means, shenluk gakpa means, we let the other guys come first. You see, it's a very beautiful way to learn. You don't find out what emptiness is right away. You only find out what it's not. You see? So shenluk gakpa, the first step is very beautiful. The Dura starts with the fighting, with debating. And somebody will come and say, emptiness is this green light that shows up over your head, you know. And then we'll blow him away, and that's called gak. So the first section of a Dura subject is always shenluk gakpa, which means blowing away the other guy. Okay? Gakpa. Second step, say shak.
Shak.
Shak means rangluk shakpa. Rangluk shakpa means, okay, now we set forth our own position. You see, first you get to hear the wrong positions of the other guys. And then in the second step, they'll say, okay, here's what emptiness really is. And you'll have the definition, and you'll have the divisions, and you'll have some clarifications about it, and like that. And that's a little section in the middle called rangluk, shakpa, shakpa. Okay? So far you have gak shak. Okay? Gak shak. The last part is called bong. Say bong. Bong. Bong means to re-blow him away. Okay? In step number three, after they've heard our version of things, they get to come and present some rebuttal. You know, they get to attack our idea. So we get up there and say, emptiness means that no object in the world has any nature of its own. So then they'll come back and say, well, I guess you think nothing exists or something, or, you know, that's a rebuttal. They get to come and complain about your ideas, which is fair, right? It's some kind of nice that they get to come back. And then we re-blow them away, and that's called boa. Normally, boa means to eliminate somebody. So it's like Schwarzenegger, the Eliminator, and you bong them, you know, and that's bong. So say gak, shak, bong, sum. Sum means those three steps, and it's very famous in Dura, okay? What are you reading? Gak shak bong sum. Okay, gak shak bong sum. Oh, what subject? Oh, we're studying shidup. Say shidup. Okay, that's the subject you're going to study tonight. The first and most important subject, I think, well, maybe not the most important, but the first one is called the shidup kim namshak. And you're going to study that from the point of view in the reading is gak shak bong sum. So don't be surprised in the reading. You're going to get a guy come up and say something stupid. And then he gets blown away. And by the time you've had 10 guys come up and say 10 stupid things about emptiness and get blown away about it, you've got a very good idea of what emptiness is. And then you get to hear the system, our own system, and then they get to come back and fight about the system. Okay? And it's very, very good for learning. Very, very powerful for learning. So oftentimes when we debate in the monastery, we start out with a wrong statement. You see, you want to start a fight. How do you start a fight in debating? You say something stupid. And if you're a good debater, you pick something that the other guy might not be able to disprove, okay? Something subtle. You wouldn't come up and say emptiness is green. You'd come up and say, well, emptiness means that things depend on my projections. Okay? Things depend on my projections, which is not emptiness, it's dependent origination, which is the brother of emptiness. That's a positive thing, emptiness is a negative thing. Okay? Dependent origination explains how things work. Emptiness explains how they don't work. You see what I mean? So, but you could start a good debate that way. You know, you could say, oh, emptiness means, you know, that. Okay? And you would go up to somebody and you'd say, okay, here we go. I need a rosary. First thing, the custom, by the way, is this is an old custom in Tibet, okay? I mean, it comes from ancient India. When you read a scripture from ancient India, it'll say, thus have I heard. And then they'll say, somebody like Subhuti approached the Buddha and got down on one knee, you know, and dropped his sen, okay? He dropped his, out of respect, he dropped his shawl. And so still in the debating, let's say if Eli is the opponent, okay, the attacker will stand up. And then he'll drop his sen out of you know, the first and last courtesy of the debate. and then you put it back here. Okay. And then you whisper in their ear the subject, you know, you say, "Di-chi-ka-chi-chi." Okay, and it's very mild, you know, you just go like that. Okay, so you gotta practice it, okay. I mean, we'll stand up and practice it later, okay? But it's like "Di-chi-ka-chi-chi." Okay, "Di." Okay, "Di" means is the root syllable of Manjushri. It's a tantric mantra. It is the short mantra of Manjushri. Okay, what's the long one? Omara Patana Di. And Di is considered an important syllable in Tantra for wisdom, for intellectual, you know, smarts. You know, and if you have a kid in the monastery who's not too bright, you say, look, go home and do D 10,000 times and come back, okay? And he'll go home and go, D. And you see him in the monastery. It's a very powerful mantra. It works, okay? Omara Batana D. And you're supposed to say it until you run out of breath, okay? Ready? Try. Om A Ra Pa Ta Na. Okay, like that, okay. D in Sanskrit means light or mind, okay, and it's an important syllable. So anyway, you start out, you say D, chita chita, okay, D. He means, you know, hey, wisdom, I hope I can remember everything. And then Jita Chochen means, how about this? You know, how about this one? Okay. And then you say something like, because the sky is green. Okay? Because the sky is green. All right? Because the sky is green.
Okay.
Huh? Tee! How about this one? Because the sky is green. You know? And that's all you have to say. Is it a reason?
Sure.
Why? Daksukupa, Dakusini. I set it forth as a reason. What does it prove? Who cares? She can evaluate the reason by itself, you see? It'll start the debate already. I can say, because everything is a projection, and that's the meaning of emptiness. And she doesn't have to know what I'm trying to prove. I never say what I'm trying to prove. I just say, hey, how about this? Because this guy is green. Okay? And immediately she can say, Tanadu, which means you're wrong. Like, and then the debate starts. You see what I mean? But you start out normally by that. Very often you'll say, Nangdong gelme. You know, you quote a scripture and you say, dependent origination and emptiness are brothers. They love each other. That doesn't mean anything. You know? So I start out and I say, Dee! Because the quotation about emptiness and dependent origination doesn't mean anything. You know, and that's all I say. You know, and that's the start of the debate. Okay, like that. That's how you start a debate. So normally, you start out by saying something crazy. Because you want to pick a fight. And if you're really good, you say something that's almost right. And that's what... and you see if he can prove you wrong. You know, and if he can't, then you blow him away at the end and show him why it's wrong. You see, and then everybody learns something. So, it's very, that's the structure of a Durdha text. They come up and they start saying things that are wrong. And then you hear them get blown away. It's like a big gunfight with Dirty Harry, you know. And then one by one, these guys get blown away. And then one by one, you learn something subtle about emptiness. Until the end of the gunfight, you know all of it. You know, you understand everything about emptiness. So when you read the reading, remember, the first guy talking is crazy, right? That's the guy who's getting got, okay? And don't forget it, you know, you'll get confused. You know, he'll come up and say, blah, 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 you know, and then you have to remember he's wrong, all right? Sometimes you get confused. In the Tibetan, it's very subtle. Who's talking? Okay. Okay, today, oh, sorry. So the subject for tonight, and we're not going to start debating today, okay, so don't worry about it. That's a... Say, Shidupki. Namshat. Shidupki. Namshat. Shidrup is a word that means existence. Okay? Existence. Things which you can establish exist. Okay? Shidrup is another word for existence. Things you can establish as existing. Shidrup. Namshat means everything you ever wanted to know about. Okay? An outline or a treatment of Shidrup. Okay? And that's our subject for tonight. You are going to study, how about all existing objects? Okay? This is an outline of everything that exists in the universe. Not bad, okay? Kind of cool. And I really like this subject. We had to memorize it early on in the monastery. Shidrup Namshat starts from the top and then goes down through the levels of all existing things. I like to tell you how this relates to your personal life, okay? What's the use of sitting there in the monastery and studying the outline of existence, especially if you don't have enough food? You know what I mean? What's this got to do with your personal life? This is very important for understanding emptiness, and I'll talk more about how this relates to emptiness. You need to know about Shidrup Namshat to understand emptiness. So we'll start with that. We'll go down through the levels of it, and then I'll tell you how it relates to your own trying to see emptiness. What's the big deal about seeing emptiness? See it in this life directly once for 15 to 20 minutes, and you're on your way out of this life. You know, you will become a Buddha within 7 lifetimes, and you see it directly. Okay? You see it directly. You see all those 4 things, including that. Those 4 things are called the 4 Arya truths, or the 4 noble truths, been mistranslated as noble truths. One of them, you see your own enlightenment directly. If you can get this class clearly, if you can understand these subjects clearly, you can reach that state. Okay? You can. That's the whole point of this class. That's what we're trying to get to in this class. Okay? That's the use of studying this subject. That's my sales pitch for Shidrup. Okay? Once you've had Shidrup Namshat, you will be able to reject about 90% of the presentations of emptiness you ever hear. Okay? You see that they're wrong right away. Okay? Say Yerpa.
Yerpa.
Yerpa. Yerpa means existence itself. Existence. Okay? Yerpa means existence. Okay? That's the big heading at the top. All existing objects. That's called Yerpa. Okay? It has a lot of synonyms for that. I'll give you some of the synonyms. Say Sheja.
Sheja.
Sheja. Sheja means knowable thing. Knowable thing. Okay? Anything you can, a knowable thing. Okay? Something which can be known. Okay? And I used to, when I was first studying Shidrup, I was like, known by whom? Because there's a lot of things I can't know that exist. You know, if it means that someone has to know it for it to exist, what about all those asteroids out between Pluto and Neptune, you know? I mean, it's not like anybody went out there and saw all them. I found a text later, and several texts later, that say, Namkengi Sheja, something which can be known by an omniscient being. That means it exists, okay? All right. So it's the tree in the forest thing doesn't apply here. There is no tree in the forest, because we're talking about things which are known by a being who sees every object in the universe at the same moment. Okay? There is no tree in the forest in Buddhism. okay, that falls down and nobody hears it, right? There's no such thing. Okay. Sheja? Hey, Che? Che? Che is the Tibetan word for the Sanskrit Dharma. Okay, Dharma. Dharma has 10 different meanings or 12 different meanings, I forget. One of them is the teachings, right? I'm studying Dharma. Another common meaning, probably the second most common meaning, is any existing object. Okay? Every existing object is a Dharma. Okay? Is a thing. Okay? You can say existing thing. Okay? That's a Dharma. Ch. These are all synonyms. If you're a Yupa, you're a Sheja. If you're a Sheja, you're a Ch. If you're a Ch, you're a say Shidup.
Shidup.
Shidup means anything which can be established as existing by a correct perception, okay, by a valid perception. It's the same as Sheja, right? Anything which you can establish exists is called Shidup. Okay? Anything which you can establish as something which exists, okay, is called Shidup. There's one more. Well, there's lots more, but here's enough, okay? Say Yul.
Yul.
Yul means object, okay? Any existing object. And we use those words in English also, don't we? An object. A thing which you can perceive. A thing which you can know. Anything. Okay, these are all synonyms for existence. Okay, for an existing thing. By the way, to warn you, they can be used for all of existence together, and they can be used as words for existing thing also. You see? This is a chu. But chu also means all existing things. Okay, so you have to get used to that. This is a chu, but chu also means all existing things. And Tibetan and Sanskrit don't have the word for a or the. Now think of how English would be if we didn't have the or a. I mean, be pretty confusing. And that it is, all right? And you can get through a page of translation and suddenly realize they're talking about the other one and go back and change them all, you know? Okay? They don't have a word for a or the. Try to speak to someone a couple times without an A or a the in the sentence, and you'll see how it is, okay? We'll divide Yupa. We'll have a org chart of existence here, okay? Here's Yupa, which is all existence, all existing things. You know, before we divide it, let's give it a definition. Could be on your homework or something. Say, Tseme Mikpa? Yupe Tseni. Tseme Mikpa? Yupe Tseni. Very famous in the debate ground. Okay, Tsema means a valid perception. Okay, you can say correct perception. What does correct perception mean? In this case, you can eliminate the following perceptions, and then the rest are all Tsemas, okay? Eliminate hallucinations, eliminate LSD perceptions, eliminate things you see under the influence of a drug or alcohol, eliminate things you see when you're really pissed off or jealous of somebody, okay? Those are all called semin. Semin means they're incorrect perceptions. They're not valid perceptions. You see things that aren't there under those conditions, okay? Those are called tsemen. So tsema, how many tsemas do you have during a day?
65.
Like 65 per fingers now, okay? All of them are tsemas. What are tsemens that I had today? I mean, I had one. There was a leaf blown across the road in dusk, and I thought it was a mouse or something, and I was like, oh, stop, you know? And then the nature of a tsemen is normally like a few minutes later or sometimes a few years later, you realize you were stupid or crazy, you know. And like you think someone was trying to get you at work, and then it turns out that it didn't have anything to do with it, it was somebody else. And that's called a tsemen. So normally 99% of your perceptions, much more, are tsemas, okay? Tsemen mikba means perceived by. Okay? Perceived by a correct perception. Perceived by a valid perception. Tsemen mikba means that thing which has been perceived by a valid perception is called semi-mikpa. Yepa, you know, means existing thing. Seni means the definition. Okay, the definition. So it's interesting. In Buddhist philosophy, in Buddhism, it's like I'm from Missouri. You know what? I believe it when I see it, or something like that. Show me state. The definition of existence in Buddhism is that which can be perceived by someone who's not crazy, on drugs, overcome by jealousy, you know. And then you can say the thing exists. Okay? Prove to me it exists. I saw it, and I'm not crazy. Okay. That's the definition of existence in Buddhism. You need to know that. Okay. All existing things exist. You can establish that they exist as soon as you can say someone has perceived them who's not on drugs or crazy or hallucinating or something like that. Okay? Yeah. They are totally consistent with each other. By the way, I warn you one thing. We are in school number 2 for this whole class. Don't forget it. Okay? We ain't in Madhyamika anymore, Toto. Okay? All right. We're in Saltantika, which is the second school of Buddhism. It's a Hinayana school. And you're going to get some mind only mixed in, but mainly we're talking school number 2. There are going to be some ideas that will be presented as part of this class that are not correct. Tsemme Mikpa is accepted by all schools as the definition of existence. What they mean by it is very touchy. And I'll try to warn you when we're getting to points where they're much different than Mr. Shantideva's ideas, okay? Even though they may use the same language. Yeah.
Seems a little circular in that Yupa, existing thing, right, is defined by being object of valid perception.
Right.
And valid perception is in turn defined by having an existence, real existence.
Yeah.
So it seems like, you know, they don't really, it goes back
Well, valid is more defined as not one of the classic kinds of mistaken perception. And then they give you a long list, you know, and you have to study. That takes like a year to study that. I think I know what you're saying, but don't forget, valid perception is not defined as that which perceives something which exists. You see, then it would be circular. You see, then it would be circular. Yeah, it's not like that. If you can say valid perception is a perception which is not one of the invalid perceptions, and then they give you a list of those. And
but how the invalid perception is defined?
That's a very long story, and each school has their own belief about it. Each school has a different belief about it. You could say maybe that it doesn't function the way you expected it to. How's that? The object doesn't function the way you thought it would. Okay, something like that. We better do it. Let me do it in the break or something. Come up to me in the break, okay? I just wanna. If we have time, we'll do it. But it's good that you have a question, and I'll try to cover some questions. Okay. That's the definition of existence in Buddhism. And if something can be perceived by a valid perception, then it exists. Okay. All existing things can be divided into 2. I'm sorry? Oh, Yupa Tseni means, Yupa means existing thing, and Tseni means the definition of, okay? The definition of, okay? And it's very famous. If you're going to be in a debate ground, Tsemme Mikpa Yupa Tseni is like a mantra. Tsemme Mikpa Yupa Tseni, Tsemme Mikpa Yupa Tseni. Definition of existence is that which can be perceived by a valid perception. Mm-hmm. Say takpa, mi takpa. Takpa, mi takpa. Don't write this, okay? I'm going to give you the system that we're going to blow away, okay? Some people say, okay, that takpa means impermanent, and that mi takpa means, I'm sorry, Takpa means permanent, and mitapa means impermanent. That's, in Buddhist philosophy, that's a mistranslation, and I want to talk about why. Okay, I want you to understand why. It's a pet peeve of mine. Okay? First, we'll talk about impermanence. What's mistranslated as impermanence. And by the way, if you go home and you meditate deeply, when we get to this section called, well, if you meditate deeply on Shidu, you will see something very deep, okay? Mitakpa comes in two forms, the gross form and the very, very subtle form. If you can perceive in this lifetime what it is in its very subtle form, you're very close to seeing emptiness, okay? It's a precursor to seeing emptiness. So listen up, okay? Mitakpa is defined as, very simply, of the Sautrantika, of the logic schools, but it's accepted by all schools. Okay. Oh, this is the right one. Okay, yeah. Go ahead and write it. Okay. It's a good question. The monasteries say, which hat should I put on? Am I a Majjhimika today or am I a Sautrantika today? Okay. Okay, say Kechikma. Kechikma. Very simple definition of mitakpa. Kechik means instant. Kechikma means something that only lasts for an instant. Okay? Subtle impermanence is, you know, it's going. Okay, that's the subtle form of impermanence. When you drop your computer on the ground and you break it, that's gross impermanence. When you're using it all day long and then it wears out after a year, it's been a victim of subtle impermanence. You see, every moment that goes by, the hard disk is deteriorating a bit, some wires starting to loosen. All over the time that you've used it, every millisecond, 65 divisions for finger snap, it's been getting older. Okay, and that's kechikma, something that only lasts. If you think about it, all of those objects are only lasting for an instant. They are changing by the instant, and that's the point of mitakpa. Okay, I translate it, and I'm always right, as a changing thing. There's a different name for the process. This is the victim of the process. This is the thing which is changing, okay? Changing thing. Now, what does impermanent mean to you? I mean, what's the difference between a permanent glue and an impermanent glue? What's the difference between an impermanent dye and a permanent dye? Huh? One doesn't last and one does last, okay? And that's the meaning of impermanent and permanent. One sticks around and the other doesn't, you know. Permanent green card means, permanent resident means it won't wear out until you die, okay? And that's what permanent means. Permanent means it will stay around for the foreseeable future. That's what permanent means. Impermanent means it will wear out or it will stop after a while, okay? And that's the meaning. Now let's talk about something like oh, by the way, I'll give you the opposite. Yeah, kechikma is the definition of mitakpa. Okay. That which only lasts for a moment. Something which only lasts for a moment is the definition of mitakpa, okay? Of what they translate as impermanent or a changing thing. How about tombanyi? What does tombanyi mean? Emptiness, okay? Shunyata. Tomba means empty and nyi means ness, okay? In Sanskrit, shunya is empty and ta is ness, okay? Emptiness. Shunyata, all right? Shunyata. Shunyata is the classic example in the whole world of something which is takpa, which is the opposite of mitakpa. You see what I mean? It's the classic example of a thing that is, they mistranslate as permanent. Okay? Permanent. Okay? If emptiness was permanent, what does that mean? Emptiness, you just said it, never wears out. What'd you say? How did you define? Yeah, doesn't last. Okay? So if permanence is a good translation, then emptiness should last forever. Does emptiness last forever? Okay? If it does, permanence is a good translation. If it doesn't, we should use a different translation. Okay? I'm debating, all right? I wish I had one of those guys here. Anyway, is the pen takpa or metakpa? Changing or unchanging? Changing, and changing by the instant. What's the proof? Eventually, you can't write with it anymore. It's been changing all that time. Don't think it ran out of ink the millisecond before it stopped writing. It's been running out of ink ever since the day it was made. The ink has been evaporating since the day it was made. The moment the ink was put in there, it's been evaporating. In Buddhism, we say the cause for its destruction is its creation. Okay? The putting the ink in there is assuring that it's going to run out. That was really stupid that you put the ink in there. You know? That's why it's running out of ink. Okay? Okay? It's the cause of its destruction. You don't need to get hit by a car. Your body will kill you very nicely. Okay? If you don't get hit by a car. Okay? So, does it have emptiness? Does it have its own emptiness? Yes. Why? Because it doesn't have any nature of its own. Oh, no, no, no. It has a nature of being a pen. Forget it. This cylinder could just as well be a chewable object to a dog that walks in here. Okay? It is validly and correctly can be perceived by a dog as a chewable object. Forget it. A dog doesn't see a pen. Okay? Forget it. They see a very, very chewable thing, just right shape for a Fasa Apso or something. Okay? You know, a puppy. You know, this is a great chewable object. They would never perceive this as a pen. Therefore, its penness is not inherent in it. It's empty of the nature of being a pen, and it's equally empty as of being a chewable object inherently. But those two beings who perceive it, a person and a dog, each impute it or supply it with that nature. They project that nature onto it. Okay? In fact, if you think deeply, that's what it is to be a dog or to be a human. You're walking around with that bag of projections is what it is to be a dog. But I'm not going to get into that, okay? It doesn't have any nature of being a pen from its own side. You see? It doesn't have any nature at all, actually. When this pen is destroyed, and it's melted down or destroyed at the garbage dump, does its emptiness disappear?
Yes.
The fact that this particular pen could have been anything else, the fact that this particular pen doesn't have any nature of its own, goes away, okay? We don't say it stops or starts, okay? That implies a gradual starting and a gradual ending, and that doesn't apply to emptiness. Why? Emptiness just blinks out, okay? When this pen is destroyed, on the day that this pen becomes dysfunctional, in the millisecond that it can no longer write, it's... Okay, I'm talking usable pen, okay? Its emptiness goes out of existence. But 5 minutes before it ran out of ink, did it have any less of a no-self nature than it did the day it was created? No, it's unchanging. It's totally constant. It is 100% an object which has no self nature. It is 100% empty. The day it's made, 10 days later, 2 months later, 3 years later, and just the millisecond before you destroy it, it is equally and perfectly void of any self nature. It could have been a chewable object. It is a chewable object validly to a dog. Okay? It doesn't have any nature of its own. And that is something that will never be more or less. It's 100% emptiness. You can't be more or less empty. It's not like, oh, it's got 10% self-nature today, and it had 12% tomorrow, and then suddenly it's not like that. So, permanent is a really crappy translation for the fact that it's unchanging. You see? Emptiness is unchanging. And that's the whole point of takpa and mitakpa. Okay? It's a mistranslation. Is the emptiness of this pen permanent? No. It goes away. Okay? So you can't use that word, because it is takpa. I mean, nobody says it's not takpa. Okay? So, that's my spiel. That's on your homework. If you didn't get it, you can think about it. Okay? The emptiness of this pen will go out of existence. We don't say stop, please. Okay? It will go out of existence. Until that moment, it will be 100% pure emptiness, as much as it was the day it was made. And that never changes. It's unchanging. It's perfectly constant. That's the meaning of takpa. It is not a thing which lasts for a moment or changes from moment to moment. It's not like that. Okay? Yeah?
Is
Yeah.
Is the emptiness of the pen different than the emptiness
of the puddle of plastic? No. At that moment, the emptiness of the puddle of plastic comes into an existence, please. Okay. Yeah, be very careful about if you meditate. By the way, you cannot perceive this unless you meditate a lot. And the points I'm making now can only be confirmed by you if you meditate on it deeply. You cannot say that the emptiness of the puddle began. It did come into existence, and there's a serious distinction there. You have to think about it. Okay. And if you get it, you'll be very close to understanding subtle impermanence, which is kokyur. It's a hidden reality. It's deep. It's hard to perceive without meditating. Right after that, you'll probably perceive chichedat. Right after that, you'll perceive emptiness directly. They're very closely related. These three subjects are very closely related. This is very sexy. If you can see subtle impermanence directly, you're very, very far along. Okay, I can describe it. You can understand it intellectually. But if you really ever see that everything is like blinding, changing every second, it's a flow of things, you're very close to seeing emptiness, okay? I gotta go on a little bit, okay? Sorry. Catch me in the break, okay? Anyway, that's the difference between permanent and unchanging. This pen's emptiness is not permanent, but it's unchanging. It's takpa, okay? It's not mitakpa. Okay, now I'll write takpa for you. By the way, in certain contexts, mitakpa is well translated as impermanence. Like in the Lamrim, chiwa mitakpa means the impermanence of a person, the fact that they have to die. That's a good translation. You see? In that case, it's okay. But in Buddhist philosophy, it's a mistranslation. Okay. I'm going to be a kachik, okay? Say kachik.
Kachik.
Kachik. Kachik is the word that's used in the Dura and elsewhere in Buddhism for some guy comes up and claims something, you know. Okay, kachik is in trouble the minute he gets called kachik. Okay, ka means mouth, chik means one. Kachik means somebody comes up and some guy comes up and says, and then they give you the wrong idea. Okay, and the whole thing of Buddhist scripture is destroying all the kachiks. They're like roaches in your apartment, okay? You got kachik, kachik, kachik. Each guy comes up with a crazy idea. I will be now a kachik, which means watch out. I'm about to write something wrong. Okay. But you can write it because I'll just change one thing and it will be right. Say kechikma.
Kechikma.
Mayimba.
Mayimba.
Mayimba you got to say with like disgust. Okay. Kechikma.
Kechikma.
Mayimba.
Mayimba.
Okay. Kechikma means what? Something that only lasts for a moment, okay? Something that only lasts an instant. Mayimba means not. Not. It is not. Ma means not. Yimba means is. It is not something that's changing from second to millisecond to millisecond, okay? By the way, sometimes the definition of mitapa is given as kechiki kenchiki kenchik chebichu, which means an object which is arising and being destroyed by the instant, you see? Now, I'll debate with you, okay? This is your first debate. Don't get nervous, all right? There's like a lot of you and only one of me after all. better give me a room. Okay. I can beat them off if they get too bad, okay? Anyway, okay. Yeah. Kechikma mayimba. Okay? Actually, start it like this, okay? Let me see. I don't have enough room here, Seamus. Later. Okay, let's say that Jay Siller is the opponent, okay? He's supposed to sit there like he knows it all, okay? Like that. And then I come up and flail against him. And if he's really strong, he just keeps saying, right, no, right, no, no, right. And sooner or later, he can destroy me just by saying that, if he's sharp, okay? Like, I can keep throwing questions at him. And sooner or later, I'll get myself in trouble, okay? Because you can always establish the truth by debating. You know, if I start out with something wrong, he can always beat me if he gives the right answers. It's a flow chart. It's a logic program. It's a computer on-off switch, you see? So, I'll come up and say, "Digital," okay? So, you know, I give him all the respect. "Digital," okay. How about this one? Okay. "D, how about this one? What do you think about this one?" Kechikma Mayimba, not changing by the instant. Takpe Tseni Yimbe Che. Okay. Takpe Tseni Yimbe Che. Okay. That's the definition of Takpa. That's the definition of an unchanging thing. Not changing by, not something that only lasts, not only lasting a minute, a second, sorry. Kechikma Mayimba. That which doesn't last an instant, okay, is the definition of Takpa. Then you say, Ta Madhu.
Ta Madhu.
Say, Ta Madhu.
Ta Madhu.
Say, Ta Madhu.
Ta Madhu.
By the way, later you can do it in English, okay? But just learn the Tibetan now. Ta Madhu.
Ta Madhu.
Ta Madhu.
Ta Madhu.
It's got to be like with power, you know? Ta Madhu. Means that means the thing you gave me as a reason. What did I give him as a reason? Oh, that's the definition of an unchanging thing. The thing which is not changing. Oh, sorry. That which is not changing, okay, is the definition of an unchanging thing. And he said, Tak Madhu. Tak means the thing you said last, that reason you gave. Madhu means it's incorrect. Okay? Madhu. Ta Madhu. Okay? Ta Madhu. By the way, you can either slap your hands, or if you're in a little group and you don't want to blow everybody away, you can. Okay? And you get, you know. Okay, so Ta Madhu. Are you telling me that's not the definition? He said, duh.
Yeah.
Duh means right, that's what I said. Duh. Then I say, sure. Sure means, well, what's wrong? You know, what's the problem here? Why?
Because there's things which last longer than an instant which aren't permanent.
Oh, yeah. You're in big trouble now. Sure. He said there's things that last longer than a second that aren't takpa.
Which aren't permanent.
Yeah. So sure, sure. Give me one. Anyway, that's a long story. You're going the wrong way. No, you're going the wrong way. By the way, all that it says in the Tibetan here so far is not something which changes by the instant. You see? Not something which changes by the instant. Is that a good definition for a thing, an object which is unchanging? No, because what about... Okay? There's a famous example, two famous examples. Okay? One is the horns that are proliferating on the head of a rabbit. Okay? And there's no such thing, right? But is it something which is not changing? Is it not changing? Yes, it's not changing, okay? It's not changing. It's not changing. But is it a thing? Is it a chur? Is it a dharma? Is it a yupa? Does it exist? No. So this is a bad definition. I could put into unchanging existing objects, I could throw rabbit's horns. If you leave the definition like this, you're in trouble. Okay? Not changing. See? I didn't say a thing which is not changing. It doesn't say a thing yet. It doesn't say an existing thing which is not changing. It just says not changing. Okay? That which is not changing. But I didn't say a thing which is not changing, and that's a big difference, okay? That which is not changing applies to non-existing things. They can't change and they can't unchange. They don't do anything. I have to say a thing, an existing thing which is not changing. So I have to add here what? What do I have to add? Let's throw in chu. And that's the definition, by the way. Now you got two parts. A thing which exists that doesn't change by the instant is the definition of an unchanging thing, an unchanging thing. Now you've got a good definition. You have to write that down. That's on your homework, okay? Kechikma mayimbe chu is the takpe tseni, okay? The definition of an unchanging thing is an existing thing which is not the kind of thing that only lasts for a moment. You see what I mean? Okay? Now you've got an airtight definition.
But can you call it a thing too?
That's a big debate, you see. Is a rabbit's horn a thing?
Or is the unchanging?
In my English translations, I say you can say something. Okay? You know, something which doesn't exist. Right? We can say that in English, right? Give me an example of something which doesn't exist. So that can be a general word.
Other words,
I'd say we better clarify thing with existing thing or something like that. I don't mind to call it thing. I'd say existing object, you see, for thing. Okay. I would translate Dharma as thing. Yeah.
You would translate Dharma as a thing?
As a thing. Yeah. But I say you could use something for things that don't exist. Give me something that doesn't exist. Then you can say rabbit's horns. You know, give me something that's a thing and doesn't exist. I think you're going to have trouble with rabbit's horns. You see, that's what I'm saying. Think about it. My Lama used to say, cook it. Okay. So you have two divisions of all existing things. They're either changing or unchanging. Okay. Take a break. And when we come back, we'll do the three divisions of changing things. Okay. I'm going to give you a couple of examples of Mikdakpas. Your homework says, give me what Dakpa, give me the two divisions of existing things. Define each one of those divisions. And then give me some concrete examples. Okay? Here are the two examples, the classical examples for Mikdakpa, a changing object. Okay? A changing object. These are the two examples in scripture that you see most often. So you picture some yogi. I like to picture this. I often picture this. You know, he's like in this tiny little hut in India. It's really hot outside. It's dusk, you know. He's sitting there with his student. First he made him memorize the Pramanavartika, and now he's explaining it to him. You know, say 500 years ago in India, okay, or 1,000 years ago. Maybe 1,000 years ago is better. And he starts teaching him about Mikdakpa, you know. Here's what Mikdakpa means. And the student doesn't get it, you know. What's an example of Mikdakpa? He says, look, look. And he looks around the hut, you know. What's in an Indian hut if you've ever been there? Not much, okay. It's a mud floor, mud walls, a couple sticks holding up the thatch, right? And there's a big water pitcher in the corner because you have to walk to the well because there's no pipes because they're too expensive. And the women spend their whole morning up till noon standing there waiting for the one faucet to be free, and then they fill up their kailash, their water pitcher, and they walk home, and then they set it there and they cover it, and that's your water for the whole day, washing, drinking, everything else, brushing your teeth or whatever. Those are the objects in an Indian home. So these are the classical objects in the logic scriptures. I'm sure it came like that. I'm sure that's why they are. Kawa means the stick that holds up the roof. Okay, it's a pillar, if you will, but I wouldn't call that stick a pillar if you've ever seen them. Okay, that's a kawa. Sarah J. just built a beautiful temple, and His Holiness inaugurated it in January. And temples in Buddhism in Tibet are measured by their kawas. You know, my temple has 153 kawas. So now my monastery, Sarah May, is trying to build 160 kawa temple. Okay. And, okay. That's a kawa, okay? Bumba means a water pitcher. People translate it as vase. That's not the point. The point is there would always be a bumba in the room where you're being taught logic in ancient India. There would be a water pitcher, or what, you know, the thing to hold the water, the day's water. It's those beautiful red clay things, and you touch them, they're cool in the summertime, and the water stays cool. They're really nice, okay? Bumba. There's an important synonym for Mikdakpa, which you should learn. Sorry. Say ngopo. Ngopo. Ngopo means a working thing. I translate it as a working thing, a functional thing, something that does something. Any object in the universe which changes also does something. If nothing else, it contributes to the continuation of itself. You see what I mean? It acts as a cause for something. Anything in the world which changes is performing a function. And they're synonyms, and you better get used to it, or you'll never be able to understand Madhyamika. You'll never be able to study Madhyamika, okay? It's very important in Madhyamika, okay? So how do we define a ngopo? I'll give it to you here. Say dunje, nipa. Ngöpö Tseni Tönche
Nyöpa
Ngöpö Tseni. Dön means thing, okay, something, goal, okay. Dönche means to do something. Nyöpa means it has the ability. So anything which can perform a function, all right? Anything which can perform a function is the definition of a ngopo. So I call it a working thing, okay? So you get used to it. Working thing to me means it does something. It does something. So emptiness must be a ngopo, right? I'm trapping you. So emptiness must be a ngopo, right? Remember, ngopo and mitapa are synonyms. Something that does something and something that changes are synonyms. Okay? You always change when you do something, right? So changing thing and working thing are synonyms. But when I presented unchanging things, I said a good example would be emptiness, because it never changes. It's always 100% emptiness. Okay? You can't be more or less void of any nature. You either are or you ain't. Okay? So, I guess emptiness is not a working thing, right? By definition. Right? If it was working, it would be changing. If it would be changing, then you'd have to say that emptiness gets more or less empty or something like that. Right? So make up your mind. Changing thing or unchanging thing? Changing? Or unchanging? Unchanging thing. Yin ba ta. You telling me it's an unchanging thing? Yeah? Okay, so it doesn't do anything, right? Right, so no use to see it, right? Won't get you enlightened. Won't stop your suffering. If you can't do anything, what's the use of it? Doesn't have a use. Right, it makes all things possible. Boy, that's a... Thank you, Mr. Emptiness. You know, remember we said many times, if I wasn't empty, I couldn't become a tantric deity, right? It must do, better do something. So make up your mind. Yeah. So it's changing. By doing, you change, period. Okay. So it's a changing thing. So... Chinam sakche sapamen lama tope duchinam sakche kanchir deda la sana kudu geba gyo sakmen lamge demba na duma chinam sumyante namka damne tomba ni bang. Okay, are you telling me that Vasubandhu never said this is one of the things which don't change? I mean, all Buddhist philosophers throughout history have always said emptiness never changes. Now, at this point, Ken Rinpoche would say, you think about it, we'll go on. I'll give you a clue, but I'd rather, I mean, if I was Ken Rinpoche, I'd just leave you hanging. There's a distinction between the perception of emptiness and emptiness, right? There's a distinction between the perception of emptiness and emptiness. Okay? Chew on that. Okay. All right. So far we had existing things. And they went into changing and unchanging. Now I'm going to give you the three kinds of changing things, three great divisions, and then we'll be done with Shidup Ginnamshat, and it'll be 9 o'clock and we can start the real class. Okay? All right? I'm going to give you the three kinds of changing things. Number one is Sukh. Okay? Say Sukh. Sukh. Okay, don't say high tone, right? Low tone. Sukh. Okay, sukh. Sukh means a physical thing. Okay, in this case, sukh means a physical thing. Physical things. That's the first kind of changing thing, is physical things. Okay. physical things. Another word for a physical thing which you'll find in your reading is pembo. Say bembo. Bembo. Bembo is defined as duldudrupa, which means a thing composed of atomic particles. You know, a composite physical thing. Whereas the emphasis here is on sukh, and I'll give you the definition of sukh. I don't get to torment you with Tibetan after this year, so I'm going to get my money's worth. Okay. Just do the top half, okay? Don't do the bottom half yet. Say suksu, runwa, suki, seni. Suksu, runwa, suki, seni. Suk, the first suk means physical, something physical, physical thing, okay? A physical thing, suk. People have translated as form. I don't like that translation. Form to me means the outline of something or something like that. Sukh is, the divisions of sukh are color and, well, no. I'll tell you what the division is of sukhs are. Suksu runwa is the definition of something physical. Let's say blue, okay? Let's talk about this blue. I was with my friend's kids the other day, and they were reading a book called A Wrinkle in Time. And the kids were trying to explain colors to beings who had never seen colors. You see? And what's the only way you can define a color? What would be I mean, if you were trying to teach somebody from Mars who came here the word blue, and you have to show it. Sukh saruma means anything you can show is as sukh, is the definition of sukh. Okay? Because when you get down to colors, you can't do it with words. You see, you have to do it, you have to say, okay? Suksaruma sukiteni. The definition of matter is that which can be presented as being matter. You see what I mean? That you can show to someone. Suksaruma means appropriate. Suksaruma means you can show it to somebody as blue. Suksaruma sukiteni means the definition of physical matter is anything which can be pointed to as being physical matter by someone who knows what physical matter is. And that's the definition of physical matter, because you can't define it otherwise. You can't go to some planet where they don't have colors and stand there and explain it to them in words. Okay? You can't distinguish between blue and green in words to someone who doesn't have colors. Okay? So you get down to the definition of color, it's very difficult. Suksuruma sukiteni. Okay? What's an example? Say tawe. Oh, by the way, suk here means physical matter. Teni again means definition. And you better learn the word teni, definition. What's an example? Tsawe rekcha. Say tsawe rekcha. In your homework, you have to write an example, okay? Tsawe rekcha. I don't mind if you do it in English. Doesn't matter to me. Tsawa means hot. Rekcha means a tangible object, something tangible, something you can touch. A hot touch. Tsawe rekcha. Okay? The feel of something hot. Okay? The feel of something hot. Rekcha means something you can touch. Tsawa means heat. Okay? Hot object. Okay? Okay. Second division. What would you guess would be the second division of changing things? If physical matter is the first one, what would number two be? Mind. The mind. Okay? Shepa. Shepa means a mental thing. I think you get in trouble if you say mind, because the thoughts are there also. You see what I mean? In English, the word mind means the main mind. And then you have the thoughts in the mind, you see, in English. And then you get a lot of, I would consider poor translations of Sanskrit and Tibetan, where every mental thing is called mind, you know, the mind of enlightenment or something like that, or, you know, or a mind which perceives, or something like that. You don't perceive, your mind doesn't perceive in English, in normal English grammar, you say, I perceive it with my mind, or something like that. You see what I mean? When you translate, try to stick to English. Otherwise it gets confusing, and people can't understand it, and then you've destroyed the reason to translate. You might as well leave it in Tibetan. If you want to have something that nobody can understand, leave it in Tibetan, you know. Here's the definition of a mental thing, okay? Say, Selsing, Rigpa, Shepe, Seni. Selsing, Rigpa, Shepe, Seni. Definition of a mental thing, okay? Definition of a mental thing. Cell is very difficult to translate here. I've asked many lamas. I've debated it in many monasteries. My current understanding, okay, as Jetson Kapa would say, which is implying that I may learn more, is invisible, okay? Invisible, okay? Usually it means clear, okay? Usually the word cell means clear, but here it means invisible. Xing means and. Xing means and. Deng, xing, xing, or qing all mean the same thing, and. Rigpa means aware. And that's the definition of a mental thing. It's invisible and it's aware. Okay? I think in the West we tend to confuse it with the physical matter which it is closely related to, you know, like your brain. When somebody says, you know, where's your mind? You go like this. For a Tibetan to go like that, for a Buddhist philosopher, that would be insane to say my mind is here. You see, because the mind is ineffable. It cannot be located. It cannot be touched. It's not even up to the end of your skin. You see, it goes beyond. You can think of what's in your refrigerator at home. In a sense, your mind has gone there. Where is your mind? You know, can you see your mind? You know, it's all very difficult questions. Invisible and aware. Okay. Examples of mental things. Okay. Examples of mental things. Dewa.
Dewa.
Say dewa.
Dewa.
Dewa means happiness in this case. Okay. Happiness. And yeshe, which means wisdom. Wisdom. These are mental events, okay? These are mental things, mental functions, okay? Those are examples of something mental. Did we cover all changing things? If we did, you might be able to go home. Did we cover all changing things? What about Tessie? Is Tessie changing? That's her, okay. Is Tessie changing? Yeah. Is she something mental or something physical? She combines both. You know, she incorporates both. But what about Tessie? It's a concept, really. You see, Tessie is a concept. Person. Person. Person is a concept, you see? You can't touch person. You can touch Tessie's body, you could, you know, get her mind mad, but Tessie, quote, Tessie, you see what I mean? That's a little tricky, all right? That's a very subtle thing. You are the combination of your body and your mind, but you are not either one itself. And so that's a third thing, like a conceptual changing thing, you see? A concept. Which is changing. Actually, Tessie is a concept. Okay? And that whole category of things is called well, I'll give you the whole thing, what the heck. That's your last thing tonight, so don't lose hope, okay? Say Denmin Duchi. Denmin Duchi. Denmin Duchi. Better get used to it. Denmin Duchi. Den means possesses, min means not, Duchi means something that does something. I translate it as an active thing, okay? An active thing. an active thing which is neither mind nor matter. Active meaning it does something, okay? Demanduchi. There's also a duche, which I'm sure you won't confuse it with, because that's different spelling, different sound. Of course, J and Che are different. Okay? And some people confuse them. But anyway, Demanduche is the third kind of changing thing. And then we're done with Shidup. We're done with what we wanted to get through tonight. The third kind of changing thing is a changing thing that is neither mind nor matter. And an example is Tasi. Kangsak means person. Person. It could be a horse, it could be a dog, it could be a human, it could be Tasi. But if you think about it, it's an idea. You can't touch Tasi. You can't throw Tasi out of the room. You can throw Tasi's body out of the room. Okay, but Tasi is an idea that covers her body and her mind. Okay? Tasi is a concept. Is it changing? Yes. Okay? So, but it's neither physical nor mental. It combines both. It's a concept which combines both. Okay? Yeah.
What makes it active?
Active thing here is only a code word for a changing thing. Okay? And people have struggled with it, you know, compositional factor. You know? If you want to make your translation sound scholastic. You know? It just means it does something. Duche means something that does something. Okay? It's a synonym for ngopo. It's a synonym for mitaka. Yeah? Excuse me?
How's the concept changing?
Tasi can die. Tasi can get old. That's Tasi's body, right? That's true. Well, you can start, but your concept of Tasi can be one thing tonight and another thing tomorrow. How's that? That's better. You beat me on that one. Okay. I'll give you all the words here, okay? Demanduchi is pretty much untranslatable. It means doesn't have matter and is not mind, but it's all in code, okay? So you might as well call it something that's changing but is not matter nor mind. It's neither matter nor mind, okay? Duche means an active thing. If you want to translate it kind of literally, you could say an active thing which is neither mind nor matter, okay? Active things which are neither mind nor matter. Changing things which are neither mind nor matter. Like horse. Like person, okay? How do you define it? Pem means physical matter. She means mental thing. Kang Ru means either one. Mayimba, it's not. Du Che means produced thing, a thing which was produced. Okay, Du Che means a thing which is produced. If any student in this class uses composting on their homework, you have to burn it, okay, Punzo? It's been mistranslated for 30 years, okay? It has nothing to do with composting, all right? Du Che means something which was Gyu Dang Kien Dune Che Pe Chu, which means something which was produced by causes and factors, okay? And all that compositional stuff is wrong. Space is composed of its directions. It's not mitakpa. It's a wrong translation, okay? So anyway, Demi Du Che, Pem She Kanru Mayimbe Du Che, which means, this is wrong, the definition. Of an active thing which is neither mind nor matter is a produced thing which is neither mind nor matter. Okay? That's all.
Is there always a combination of mind and matter?
No, not necessarily. For example, in the Vaibhashika system, in the Abhidhamma system, when you get to a certain point, like you'll never be born in the hells again, you get a certain thing grows on your body in your continuum, which keeps you unpossessed of that thing. Okay, and that's another example if you want one. If you want me to go further, we... Topa yang me, ma topa yang me do, in the Heart Sutra. That's what it's talking about. By Vaibhashika system, there are certain things that are neither mind nor matter which exist. Bhakchaks. Huge debate about bhakchaks. Are they mind? No, they live in the mind. Are they matter? No. You can't operate them out. But what's a bhakchak? A bhakchak is a mental seed, a propensity or an energy in the mind. It's not physical and it's not mental. It resides in the mind, but it's neither physical nor mental. There's a huge debate about that. But those are some more examples. They're kind of rare. Okay, they're not too common. There's a debate about whether words are physical sound or concepts. And that would be a demanduchi, okay? Depending on whose school you're in. Okay. I thought we'd have some fun, okay? And then you can go home. I need a rosary. I just want to show you how to start a debate, okay? And so your reading for the debate part of your text tonight says, we'll talk about three different things about debating. One is posture, one is how to use a rosary, and the third one is how to start an argument. All right? So we'll go through the three. Normally, the defender sits down, and then the attacker stands up. Everything is initiated by the attacker. Okay? So when you sit down, I used to like to prefer to be the attacker because at least I knew what was coming. You know, to be the defender, you have to sit there. The guy could ask you anything out of 18 years of study. He could quote anything out of thousands of pages. You know, like you're defenseless. You're supposed to pick like a really obscure quotation that he probably forgot like 6 years ago, you know. And then you say, what does that mean, you know? And so it's almost more fun to be the attacker than the defender. But the defender has to sit there and listen really carefully. And then the attacker, you're like, you come into the debate ground and you're like, you like saunter up to the guy and you're already clicking, you know. You're already like, let's see, what is he? He probably hasn't heard about that for a while, you know. That's if you're lazy, okay? If you're a good debater, you pick the things you're not sure about. You see? Like, I'm not sure about this thing that he said about the person not being the physical or mental. I'd like to debate that, you know. Let's debate whether the person is physical or mental. Can you throw out Tessie's body without throwing her out? You see what I mean? Or vice versa. And what is the relationship between those things? And if you're a good debater, and if you really get into debating the right for the right reasons, bring up the things that you're not sure about. You know, when you spend time with your Dharma friends in this class, and when you do your debating practice together, okay, which you will, bring up the things that you're not sure about. And see if, sometimes if you have three good guys together, you can figure out something, even though none of you knows any more than the other guys. But just talking it over helps a lot, you know. And so you try to pick the questions that you're not sure about, okay? And you would come up and say, "Tongni mitapa yimbe," okay? Like you say, you start the debate by "di," say "di," chita, chechen, "di," chita, chechen. But you say it very quiet. You say "di," chita, chechen. Okay, and then you say, "tapa." You say "tongni tapa yimbe." "Tongni mitapa yimbe." Emptiness is something that changes. Okay? Emptiness is a changing thing. We were unsure about it. Like, take the one thing that you're most unclear about and bring that up. It's very, the comfort level is low. The truth-seeking level is high. You see what I mean? And you can tell the great debaters, they always bring up the things that they're not sure about, even though they may look like a fool for a few minutes. But if you keep that up for a year or so, you're not a fool anymore. You've actually explored all the difficult questions. Galupa writers tend to, when in their textbooks, they ignore the easy parts. They don't even write about them. They only bring up the hard parts. It's called the kani. Okay, so anyway, let's debate something we're all not kind of clear on. Tongni mitapa yimbeche. Okay? Tongni mitapa yimbeche. Okay? And today I'm not going to try to teach you debating. I just want to show you the posture. So you start out, when you say "di jita chichen," you normally have this here. You've paid some respect to them, okay? And it's very quiet. And sometimes they'll go right down to your ear and say, "di jita chichen," you know? And then you step back and you say, "tongni chichen, mitapa yinte, dunjen nyupa yinbi. And then you give a slap. Okay, that's all I want you to learn tonight, really, okay? You go down like this. And then you come back and you say, dong yi ju jian, which means let's talk about emptiness, okay? Ngopo yinte, we'll say ngopo yinte. It's a working thing. Dunjin nyupa yinbi yinche. Because it performs a function. Dunjin nyupa yinbi yinche. Okay, and you gotta get used to that, all right? So I'll show you one more time. Then you gotta practice a moment, all right? Okay? Normally it's your left foot forward. Okay, I'm sorry, it favors righties, okay? The lefties will have to get used to it. So your left foot's forward. And sometimes you'll even have the toe up, okay? And you've got this. This will be like this. Later on, you'll be going like this, okay? And if you saw the tankas, I checked it out. There's two tankas, Dhammakirti and Dignaga. I honestly don't know which is which. But in our temple at Leon's house, they're both like this. This has been this way for a long time. And when you're in a debate, you'll be like, you know, like that, you know? Okay. But you start out with it here, you know? And you go, Dongbanyi Chichen. Say Dongbanyi. Say Dongbanyi Chichen. Dongbanyi Chichen. Dongbanyi means emptiness, shunyata. Okay? Chichen, you gotta get used to. Chichen means this is the subject we're going to debate. In scripture, it's called Shendun Chichen Kyunme, which means the subject under argument. Okay? Dongbanyi Chichen. So every syllogism has three parts. Okay? The first is the Chichen. Chichen means what are we gonna talk about? Okay? Chichen means what are we gonna talk about? What are we gonna debate about? What are we gonna be debating about? Dongbanyi. Dongbanyi Chichen. Okay, Dongbanyi Chichen. It could be anything. Dongbanyi Chichen. Then you're like this. You're already like this, okay? Left foot forward. I mean, it's just the custom, all right? Dongbanyi Chichen. And then you say, Ngopo yinte. And then by then you're normally, I mean, you don't have to point at the guy, but it's like, huh. Okay, say, Ngopo yinte. Ngopo yinte. It's a functional thing. It's a working thing. Okay. I think it's a working thing. Ngopo yinte. Ngopo yinte. Okay. That's called drupje chu. Okay. Say drupje chu. Drupje chu. You can read it in your reading, but drupje chu means the quality that you're trying to prove. The quality that you're trying to prove. What quality? That it's a working thing. That it does something. Okay. That it's a working thing. Okay. That's called drupje chu. Drupje chu. And those are the elements. Element number one, chichen. What are we arguing about? Element number two, dupcha chu. What is the quality you're trying to prove about emptiness? See, dupcha means to prove, chu means quality. What's the quality you're trying to prove about emptiness? That it's? Working thing. That it's a working thing. Okay? So far we have two parts. All I'm going to do tonight is three parts. You'll be out of here by 9:30. You can practice stamping. I hope you don't live above somebody. Okay? Okay. Dupje chu, ngopo yinte, dunche nyupa yinbe chu. Say dunche nyupa yinbe chu. Dunche nyupa yinbe chu. By the way, you don't have to debate in Tibetan. I'll have you in groups in a week or two, in a class or two, and you'll be debating. The English track will be debating English, and that's okay. So don't worry about it. Don't run away because there's a lot of Tibetan here. But those of you who want to learn your homework Tibetan, for example, if you debate it for 10 minutes, forget it. You'll never forget it. It's really nice. It's really good. Okay? Dunjin nyupa? Yinbe chu. Then it's like, you got to practice. Okay? Like that. I wasn't dancing in Time Magazine. Okay? All right? You get this up like that. And, you know, you can tell the new kids because they're like... Forget it. It's like that. Because you need power. You need some. What do you call it? Some, you know. So it's like that, and then you're like, okay, like that. All right. So you gotta practice it at home. All right. I don't want to see people like that. I did one of my exams like that, and I got fried afterwards by Rinpoche. Okay. So it's like your arm is up like that, and then a lot of power coming down. A lot of power, okay? So you can go home and practice this. You see kids at the monastery, you know, practicing. You know? And this just, it's just nice to do the old custom. And then you kind of keep it there, you know. Or you might go like, you know. Okay, all right. And there's all this body language. I described it in the reading. But then you wait for him to answer. And if he's slow, you just kind of go. Okay. It's like, and you're waiting, you know, and if after a while he doesn't answer, you know, you start a wo, okay? Say, wo. I'll do one, okay? Do, cha! Practice. Do, cha! It means, come on, you know. Yeah. And then you start a wo. If you start a wo, that might be 900 people will repeat it. See, all the audience will help. You. And it's very embarrassing. Like you're furiously trying to remember where this quotation comes from. And there's this whoa going on, you know. So it's like that. What's up? So first this is all you have to learn tonight. If you want to do it in English, D. We won't change the Sanskrit mantra, okay? We'll leave those alone. Everything else will translate. Okay. How about this one? Okay? D, how about this one? And then you give a small clap, but you don't yell. Okay, and then you kind of back off, and you get your left foot forward, and then you can even see them like this, you know, getting ready, you know. And then they say, "Dombini chen." Let's talk about Dombini, you know. And you keep eye contact with the guy, you know, normally, unless you're like so disgusted, you're like, "Dombini chen." Okay, Dombini chen. Nobu yinde, dunji nipa yinbi chen. Okay, and then you give them, and it hurts after, you know, I've seen many times in the winter debates the people's hands are cut open and there's this blood spurting in your face, you know. And if you do it for like 18 hours a day, it's like, and it's really good for young monks who are trying to keep their vows and stuff like that. I mean, it's very good. It's actually a very good custom in the debate. We do it for 5-6 hours a day. And then you have certain types of people who are very physical or athletic, and it helps everybody, you know, because the time you get home, you're totally exhausted, you know, and you're like, and you're refreshed, and it keeps you healthy also. It's really nice. It's a great custom. And you're out in the night air, and you're excited, and everybody's laughing, and it really breaks the monotony of studying all day or memorizing all day. And it's really a lot of fun. So, try it at home, and next time, you know, we'll try to clear things off a little bit and do it. Okay, you start out. You do start out like that. How about this one? Let's talk about emptiness. It's a working thing because it performs a function. Okay? I'll say it again in English. It would be like this. How about this one? Let's talk about emptiness. Consider emptiness. Okay? It's a working thing. Because it's a thing which performs a function. Okay? And all these flagstones in the Ceramade debate ground are broken into pieces, you know? Because thousands of people smashing them all day long, you know? And that's how you have to do, okay? So you practice it at home like that. Okay? The last element where I said, because it's a thing which performs a function, is called the tak. Okay? Say tak. Tak. Okay? Dak. Dak you had last week, it means reason. Okay? The reason. And I'm going to write you those because we have 4 more minutes and I can torture you a little bit. Say, Chuchen.
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 Chuchen is the subject. What was our subject this time? Domini. Okay? Emptiness. We said, Domini Chuchen. We didn't get that far, right? We were like, Domini Chuchen. Okay? Domini Chuchen. Let's talk about Domini. Domini Chuchen means the subject is Domini. By the way, the basic requirements for the subject, although you can study it more carefully in the reading. And the reading is hard, okay? You've got to spend a lot of time on it. It's like 40 pages. We all went crazy doing it. Many all-nighters, okay? There are basically 2 requirements. Your opponent must have perceived that object. With a tsema, you see, with a valid perception. In other words, you and I can't debate about a Krasny Dvir, because you don't know what I'm talking about, unless you know Russian, okay? K-Merrick, okay? You know, you can't debate about that, a red door. Because if I say, if I use a language that you don't know, that's not a good Chuchen. You see what I mean? It must be, first of all, an object which the opponent knows what it is, okay? He has confirmed that this thing exists, okay? Normally, when you're making a debate with somebody, like you're responding to a question they made or something like that. Like somebody comes up to me and says, "I think emptiness is isn't changing thing," and then I'm going to debate with him. Then I have to assume he knows what emptiness is intellectually. You know, by the way, you don't have to have a perfect understanding of the thing. You understand the word, and you have a rough idea of what it is. If you had seen it directly, you'd be an Arya. You wouldn't be asking me if it was an unchanging, a changing thing. You would never say that. So it doesn't mean that you have to perceive it absolutely correctly, but you have to know what I'm talking about when I talk about emptiness. Okay? You must have your own tema of emptiness in a very rough way, okay? At least. Okay? Tomani, the second requirement is the opponent must be unsure whether or not it is what you say next. You see what I mean? What am I going to say next? It's a working thing. It's a working thing. He must doubt that fact. He must be unsure about that fact. And those are the two requirements, okay? He must know what the subject is, and he must be unsure about whether it's the thing you're about to say. You see, you're about to assert that it's a certain thing. You're about to say, it is a working thing. And he has to be in doubt about that. In other words, you're starting with an assertion. He has to doubt it, or you wouldn't be arguing about it. Okay? It has to be something he doubts. Okay? If the opponent doesn't think, if he doesn't have doubt about what you say, you have just presented an incorrect reason in Buddhist logic. In the classic proof is, you know, if you go up to Dharmakirti and try to prove one of these things, that's incorrect reasoning. You see what I mean? It counts as much as a wrong reason. It's invalid. You can't use it, okay? You can't argue something to somebody that they already accept, okay? So those are the two requirements, basic requirements of the subject. It must be that they know what you're talking about, and they must doubt that it is what you're trying to prove. Okay, that's all. Okay. Now, Dupche Chö. What was the Dupche Chö? What was the thing we were trying to prove about emptiness? That it's a working thing. Okay. I'll give you this second element. Yeah, you picked the wrong subject, actually. You know, you've picked the wrong subject. I mean, you can debate it for the exercise of it, you know, and they do in the monastery. But the greatest teachers in the monastery, in front of 1,000 monks, will take a position which is totally wrong, just to see if this young monk can learn to prove him wrong, because he's trying to help the other person. You see, it's not who wins. The great debaters are searching for subjects that are delicate. You know, it's called delicate in Tibetan. They're looking for subjects that are touchy because they want everyone to learn something profound. You see? And you're trying to explore the unknown together. Really, debate is exploring the unknown. You're not, it's the American idea that it must be a competition or somebody has to win and somebody has to lose is very sick, and it's totally foreign to Tibetan Buddhism. It's when you go to the debate ground, it feels so nice. It's like exploring the unknown with your friends, and it's great. It feels wonderful. And you go home and you understand so much more than when you went there. It's a beautiful thing. It's a really beautiful thing. And you should never feel embarrassed or shy or say, I had a couple people come up to me and say, yeah, could I sit in the back during the debating because, you know, I'm not too good at yelling and stuff. You don't have to yell. I don't care if you yell. The great, great, great debaters are like, Tombani Chuchen. You know, and you see the great ones, the really, especially as you get older, you get less, you know. You know. But you also get, it's like a violin player, you know. I mean, you just get more, you know, they'll sit there and go, they're like that. You can't even hear the finger snap, you know. And they're wiping you out, you know. But you're learning, you see. So don't ever be shy or embarrassed. Never think like that. That's pride. If you think about it, that's pride. Forget your pride. Go in and explore the things you don't know, and your mind will get expanded immediately. It's really fun. So forget the pride thing. You know, people say they're embarrassed. You're not embarrassed. You're just too proud to get embarrassed in front of other people. A good Buddhist wants to learn. You know, you want to learn something about emptiness. Come on, bring up something I don't know. Okay, let me learn something. You see, that's better. Have that attitude when you debate. Okay, so that's a drupje chö. What's the requirement for something to be a drupje chö? Yinme kanu yinayam drupje chö yinme chabe chö. You can be the object that you're trying to, the quality that you're trying to prove about this chuchen. What's the quality we're trying to prove? That emptiness is a working thing. To be a working thing is the quality we're trying to prove. By the way, that second element, the quality you're trying to prove, in Tibetan called the drupje chö, doesn't even have to exist. Because the definition of the quality that you're trying to prove is simply anything that both you guys want to consider the quality being proven. Because, for example, you can prove that something is non-existent, right? In that case, the thing doesn't even exist. So it doesn't even have to exist, you see? As long as you both consider it the thing the guy's trying to prove. That's the definition of the quality that you're trying to prove. You both consider it the quality that you're trying to prove. And that's enough. It could be a castle in the sky. It could be rabbit's horns. It could be anything. As long as you're both in sync, that this is what you want to prove about the subject. Okay, that's all. The only requirement. Doesn't even have to exist. Yeah. I can say thing you're trying to prove. But see, quality is good because quality of the subject. You see? Quality of the subject. You're trying to prove that it's a quality which applies to the subject. A what? That's the whole statement.
That's what you're trying to prove.
No, there's a difference. By the way, there's a distinction about between what you're trying to prove and the quality you're trying to prove. You see? What am I trying to prove? That emptiness is a working thing. What is the quality about emptiness that I'm trying to prove? Being a working thing. You see, there's a distinction between element number two and element number one plus element number two. What I'm trying to prove, the statement I'm trying to prove, the idea I'm trying to prove, if you think about it, it's the combination of number one and two. It's that emptiness is a working thing. The fact that emptiness is a working thing. And that's called dupcha. I wouldn't have brought it up, Mr. Han, and you would have gotten home on time. But since you brought it up, it's great to learn all these, and that's part of the class. That's the second half of the class. Dupcha is the combination of one and two. Dupcha means what we're trying to prove, the statement we're trying to prove. You could call it the assertion. Okay, it's the thing we're trying to prove. What are you trying to prove? That emptiness is a working thing. What's the quality about emptiness you're trying to prove? Being a working thing. What's your subject of this debate? Emptiness. Okay? Last part. Then you really can go home. Say tak.
Tak.
Definition of a tak is what? Well, it means reason, right? But what's the definition? Tak sukupa. Anything you want to say is a reason. Okay? Take emptiness. It's a working thing. Because the sky was green on the 32nd of January. Okay. Fine. It's a false reason, but it's a reason. Okay? It's an incorrect reason, but it's a reason. I like to impress on you why it's important to debate. Why is it important to do this?
Yeah.
This is the end of class 2.
You have been listening to The Art of Reasoning with Geshe Michael Roach, presented by the Asian Classics Institute.
The Asian Classics Institute is dedicated to preserving the pure teachings and practice of Buddhism. For a listing of other topics available, write to The Asian Classics Institute, P.O. Box 20373, New York, New York, 10009, or call 212-475-7752.